speaker is Dan, who's going to tell us everything about what we need to do to get Leonard to install particle OS in his laptop. So there you go. Let's welcome Dan.
Hello. So let me start with a few questions, right? Like, who understood what Leonard was talking about in the last talk? All right. Not great. Like, so then let's go to who wants their distribution or themselves to use all the stuff that Leonard was talking about in the CKM talk? All right. That looks pretty good. Who is actually using the stuff that Leonard is talking about in the CKM talk? Not very great. So lots of you want to use it. Not many are using it yet. But before you actually start using it, we need to talk. Like, we need to have a chat. We need to talk about dog fooding. What is dog fooding? Well, it's the act of using your own software. What is the state of dog fooding in systemd then? It's a good question to ask, right? And so let me start with just a picture, right, from the secret internal systemd maintainer chat. Like this comment if you're using run0 and not sudo anymore. 18 feet, only one of them actually liked it, which was me. So we have this run0 thing to replace sudo, but is any systemd maintainer actually using it? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, there we go. not yet. Of course, run0 is one tool, so I mean, it's not a proper measurement of whether we're dog fooding correctly. So here's a list of Leonard's inventions. Right, there's unified kernel images, the old stuff, GPT auto, and then the new stuff, PCR log, and all the other stuff that Leonard has invented over the years. It's not all of them. and the list might have been chosen to make him look bad, but we'll see that in the next slide. So let's take a look, like, what is Leonard actually using, according to my guess? I think it looks like this. So Leonard runs a stock Fedora workstation install, last time I asked, which is, sure, you have CRUD setup because, well, Fedora does an encrypted root disk. He uses HomeD, I do know that, and he gets rid of grub as well and replaces it with systemd boot. So that are the good things. But then the other stuff is not really used at all.
I use MKOSI every fucking day.
Yeah, to develop, but not to manage your system. Yeah, so run0, PCR log, and unified kernel images, I wasn't sure. Are you using unified kernel images?
For my, like, the actual boot and
for the actual, yeah, because Fedora doesn't do it, right? Oh. So that goes red, PCR log, I guess, isn't used either, so that's red as well, but run0 is green. So the overall conclusion is, like, there's a lot more red than there is green, right? Which is not great. Of course, we can't just single out Leonard, so I asked around for some other systemd maintainers as well. Luca is using unified kernel images on his laptop. I know that Zbigniew is using MakeOSI InitRD, so MakeOSI becomes yellow because MakeOSI InitRD is only a little bit of the all the stuff you can do with MakeOSI. I know Mike is using systemd GPT auto generator and credentials, so it's a little better, but still a lot of red, right? Nobody's using Verity, nobody's using signed PCR policies on their laptop, and the extension stuff isn't really being used. Either, because again, why would you? You have like a writable user partition, so you just DNF upgrade to get your updates. There's no need for all the extension stuff. Why is this a problem? So what happens is we merge a lot of new stuff with public APIs, but there's nothing immediately using that stuff. The public API then goes into a stable release, and we guarantee backwards compatibility. So once that happens, we can't change it anymore. We wait a little while. Someone tries to actually use the interface, and it turns out it doesn't exactly do what's needed or needs changes, or it's just incomplete. It's not often that, like, the interface is wrong. Most of the time, it's just incomplete, and there's, like, you find out that some important thing is missing for you to be able to use it effectively. And then we have to figure out how to either fix the interface or just complete it. This is pretty generic. Like, what it actually ends up looking like in practice is that Leonard is the one merging all these public APIs. I'm the one trying to use them. I find out they don't work, and I have to complete them. not amazing. So how do we make Leonard talk with systemd, or in other words, how do we make Leonard his own consumer of his own stuff?
It seems his situation is fine.
Hmm?
It seems his situation is fine.
Yeah. So all we need to do, of course, is create systemd's own distribution, right? Like we reject the Unix philosophy, right? We've stolen DNS, we've stolen network, we've stolen init, we steal everything, so why not steal the distribution as well? That was a joke. This slide is the one I expect to come on Veronix, but we'll see. We can't reinvent the entire wheel when we do this, right? It's just me. I don't have time to repackage the world. So we need to reinvent the wheel a little bit, but not completely. Otherwise, it will never get done. It needs to be GNOME, because Leonard is a GNOME person. So if it doesn't have GNOME, we'll never get Leonard to use it. It has to use as many systemd tools as possible, because if we're not using systemd tools to build it, then we're not getting the dog fooding in the first place. The more systemd tools we use, the more we exercise the interfaces and the implementation, the more bugs we find, which are hopefully fixed before it gets into the hands of users, instead of after it gets into the hands of users. Using all the systemd tools is in itself not enough, because if we package this with a systemd, or if we use a systemd stable release in this distribution, or at least in the version of it that Leonard will run, it's too late, right? The public APIs we've been merged already, backwards compatibility guarantee, and we can't fix them. So it has to run systemd straight from git main, so that we can immediately start using the new public APIs in the distribution, exercise them, make sure they work, fix them if they don't work, before we're tied by backwards compatibility. We have to enable easy hacking on systemd and the distribution itself, because we want Leonard to run this. Leonard needs to be able to hack on systemd, so this needs to make that possible. We also want Leonard, ideally, not to just work on systemd, but to also implement all the stuff he adds to systemd in the distribution, so that we have the end-to-end thing completed, and he gets to immediately consume the API he adds, instead of waiting for any distribution to eventually hopefully pick them up. It has to be customizable. I don't pretend to know what Leonard needs on his laptop. Systemd, needs to be on there. But like, I don't know what packages he needs or whatever, so I'm not going to pretend I can know. So like, it just needs to be customizable, so that if anything's missing, Leonard can just add it himself, customize whatever he wants, so that like, he's happy with the system. And of course, well, Leonard is extremely afraid of evil mates these days, so we need to do secure measure put to make sure that he can sleep soundly at night. So then we get to particle OS, which is basically the implementation of all those requirements. It's an immutable image-based distribution, like, again, all the stuff Leonard wants, really. It's immutable in the way that /user is immutable. Etsy and the root partition is encrypted, of course, but writable. And then /user is read-only, the invariety, the way Leonard has described it in countless of talks. It's built using MakeOSI, it's a systemd tool. It uses a bunch of other systemd tools, so we use it because we know it, and it forces us to do extra dog fooding. There's an Arch version because I like Arch. There's a Fedora version because Leonard likes Fedora. We have KDE and GNOME. Again, Leonard likes GNOME, I like KDE, so those two are the versions. And then it's self-signed, so this is where it starts to differ a bit from the regular or other immutable distributions. The other immutable distributions are very much focused on being something that is built somewhere on a build machine in the cloud or like on a server somewhere, and then you download it with, I don't know if any immutable distribution already completely does this actually, but the idea is that you get the key from the vendor, the signing key, you enroll that into your UEFI firmware, or you use mock when it's like with the whole shim thing. Which is not great. But the problem with that is that you can control what goes into the image that way, because it's all signed by the distribution. With this, we do self-signing, so that you sign it, which means you control what goes in it. So you get full control. You customize the image however you want, you sign it yourself, and your computer will only run the stuff that you signed. and not whatever the distribution sign. So you get back some, I think you get back control. I don't think when we, like the whole world seems to be moving towards immutable distributions, but I don't think we want to end up in a place where we're all using distribution keys in our, or enrolling distribution keys. I think we always want to make it possible for users to sign things themselves so that they retain full control if they would want to do so. I don't think the vendor-provided keys thing is bad. I just need to think we need to make sure that the other way is also always possible. Otherwise, you can end up in like awkward and not great situations. And so, like I said, you build it yourself. So you don't download the image when there's an update. You build the update yourself on the system, and then install it, reboot, and you get into the new version. That's where we're developing this stuff. So it's basically it's a repo with a giant Mako site configuration that sets all of this up, and with the documentation on how to install it. So let's take a look at some workflows to make concrete how you would start running this stuff. Right, installing Mako SI is as simple as clone the repo, put it in your path, and you can use it. Pre-deployment. So you have an existing laptop. You want to build the image to install on any device, right? A desktop, laptop, whatever. Clone Particle OS, edit Mako SI to local.conf. That's where you can put all the customizations. So any Mako SI setting, you just configure where you add packages, you add files, you switch the file system, whatever you can think of, you can do it. You build the image, then you end up with a DDI with three partitions. So the ESP is there with the signed UKI in it. you have the Verity partition for slash user, and you have the actual slash user partition itself with your image in it. No root partition or anything, that's created on first boot and locked against the TPM the way Leonard like wants it. And then we have like a burn command to just like, it's basically, it's a DD, but a little smarter. And then you get it on to your USB ready for installation. Actually installing it, the first thing you do is you set a UEFI password. If you don't, the entire thing is pretty much useless because like an attacker will just go into the BIOS, disable secure boot, and well, what's the point? So you need a UEFI password. You need to put secure boot in setup mode. Setup mode is basically like, gets rid of the existing keys and puts the secure boot in a state where new keys can be enrolled. Once you do that, you boot from the USB. There will be you'll get into systemd boot. There will be a very nice enroll secure boot keys menu entry where you select that, and systemd boot will enroll the secure boot keys for you into the system. It can do this automatically, but there's a lot of horrible UEFI firmware out there, so we don't do this by default, right? We make it an explicit choice. It will tell you that this might break your system. In this case, it won't, but gotta be safe. And then you have secure boot setup. That means you can select the installer UKI profile next, and it'll load. The installer mode is basically meant for USBs. Like, it's not, so the image is on a USB, but it's not the final destination where you want to install it. So you boot into the installer UKI profile, which means that root partition and all that stuff doesn't get created. You just get into a shell where you can actually install it to the disk you want it to. So it'll auto lock you in as root, and you can just run systemd report after that to actually deploy the image to the disk that you want it on. That is red because that erases your drive, right? We don't do dual boot yet, installing to existing systems. So currently, you have to erase whatever is on that disk to be able to install this. And then you reboot. And then this is what your disk will look like. So we have those first three partitions that were in the image. Those just got copied to the target disk. And then we created a whole bunch of new partitions, a Verity partition and another user partition. So those are the B partitions, right? This is an AB setup. You install to the B partition the update. And then you switch to it. Swap partition encrypted against the TPM, root partition encrypted against the TPM, and a separate home partition to be used with, not encrypted, but to be set up to be used with systemd homed. First boot, I mean, pretty simple. You select a regular UKI profile. Systemd first boot runs, asks you a bunch of questions. Home kernel first boot runs and sets up your homed for your regular user. You log in, you change a bunch of the settings because the defaults will horribly break and absolutely not work at all. Like, I got locked out of my home like 5 times trying to get this to work. So there's some bugs to fix there. So, but for now, like, we change a whole bunch of settings and then it does work. And then you enable your display manager of choice, so SDDM for KDE or GDM for GNOME, and then it's installed, right? Then you log in and you get into your desktop environment and you can set up the thing the way you like it. How to hack on systemd? So the base image is immutable, so no compiler, no meson or whatever in there, right? The bigger the base image gets, the longer updates take, so you don't want to make it too big. So what other immutable distributions do is like distrobox or containers, whatever, to do all their development. That means OCI. If you say OCI, Leonard runs away, so that doesn't work. So I implemented something in MakerSite to basically do the same thing, right? It's a sandbox where you can install all the development tools you need. It does it automatically, so if you run that in the systemd repo, it'll just download all the stuff you need and you can run it from there. And then, right, you do development with MakerSite on systemd as usual, right? You spawn a VM and then you can test changes. And then the final one is update. So you edit that makerside.localconf file again, add the packages you want, build the update, and then you run makerside sysupdate update, which will install to the B partitions, right, which are empty on the first update, and then the old version on when you do it the next time. It will copy the UKI to the ESP, and that's it. That's the update. So it should be very atomic. And of course, there's a B partition. So if the new update doesn't work, you can always go back to the old version and like, report a bug or I don't know. Then, yeah, so reboot to get into the update. So this is like important. It's not like DNF upgrade where you just upgrade and then continue using it. Each update requires a reboot. So what I've noticed is that I update less because update means a reboot. Like, I don't know, we probably need to do something about this eventually, but because having to reboot for each update is kind of annoying, but it works. You just end up updating less than usual. So what do we end up with on this laptop? Of course, because it would be extremely hypocritical to be like hack a Leonard about not using all of this stuff and then do this presentation from a laptop that's not using all of this stuff either. So this is running Particle OS. It has been for a few months, and we end up using all of these things. So no PCR lock yet, because I have no clue how to set it up. Leonard needs to tell me. Then we can probably enable PCR lock as well, or at least I hope. And then we don't use all the extension stuff yet either, because you built the image locally, and you have full control over it, so there's no real point in the extensions. So, like, we still need to figure something out for that. Does it work? Yeah, I find regressions in systemd. I report them and they get fixed, so that's great. Not really. There's also a lot of regressions that, or stuff that doesn't work that doesn't get fixed. So it's whatever. But I have found regressions and they were fixed, so it does help in that way. Call to action for Leonard, right? Let's focus on building end-to-end solutions. Don't just merge the API in systemd. Also get it running in Particle OS so that we have so that we're actually using it. Let's make sure we consume our own APIs immediately, either ourselves or a user, and switch to Particle OS. What's missing? Luca is working on building these images in a build system. Still needs a lot of work, but then you could actually download the update instead of building it yourself. That's the part that's going to force dog fooding of all the extension stuff, because then it's signed by a vendor key. You can't modify it locally immediately anymore. So that will help us get dog fooding for that part. Right, PCR lock, I mentioned. Add more distributions. We have Arch and Fedora, but of course I want to add more. I'm sure some people would love a Debian version. Desktop environments, eventually dual boot, and yeah, get Leonard to use this. Basically, this talk is this. that was the end. Happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
So I have a question about the credentials. Could that be used in principle to unlock like your A wallet without having to enter your password? So is it web and passwordless plugin?
This is probably a question for Lana more than me.
I mean, you can do that, but I think ultimately the wallet should probably be unlocked by some key. that you derive from your home directory. And I've been talking to GNOME people about this, like what they want to do with there are ideas, but it's more. Have you been in a talk earlier than this where I was talking about user credential, like user bound system credentials, think stuff? That's kind of what they want to use there. But then it should happen automatically.
Other question: is there any reboot integration so that like it detects that the system like a system failed and then reverts back to the old?
So there is a target. Oh yeah. So is there any like I guess automatic rollback is what you're. Yeah. So I know there is a target for this in systemd. First, which one? What's the name again?
BlazBoot.
Yeah, BlazBoot. That's the one. Yeah. So you can order stuff before that, and then if it fails, it'll do the rollback. And we have boot counting like set up in ParticleOS, but I don't. We don't order anything before BlazBoot again already. So. I don't know if we have any stuff already that is ordered before that will roll back if it fails.
We have
but
it for UPI, so if the UPI fails to load, then it works already.
So it's there, but it's probably pretty basic and could use like could be extended a lot more. But you can always do it manually, of course.
What I do is image their systems is to recover from an infected system. And so if you
yes, so that's the part that Luca is working. Oh, yeah. So the question was, the first one is if you have an infected immutable system, then if you build the update on the system itself, there's a good chance that it'll also be infected. So how do we get rid of that? I'll answer that first, and then I'll get to the second part. So I think the idea there is that we have factory reset. So if you have an infected system, then in this case, you would have to do a complete factory reset to get rid of all state, but you can keep all the measured or all the trusted stuff like your slash user, but all the rest goes away and then you start from scratch. And then the second question was, does it also make sense to have a default version that is provided by the distribution of the, or an image that's provided by the distribution? And so the answer is yes. That's basically the part that Luca is working on. It's not trivial for existing build systems to actually be able to do this signing. So we're trying to get this working in the OpenSUSE build system, which does offline signing. So you can't sign when you're doing the image build. It's a completely separate async process. So the entire build process has to be modified to extract all the data that needs to be signed without actually signing it. Then get it signed by a completely different thing, get those inputs back, and then insert them into the image. This is a very different workflow than what you usually do, which is you sign when you need to in the build process itself. So we need to do quite a few horrible changes. Yeah, he is doing all the hacks required to make that work, but we'll get there eventually, I think.
Okay.
Now that's upstream, and users don't really have to deal with packages anymore, they only have to deal with images. And 6.6.x, so it's like, are 6.6.x the new packages that people who build images can also use so that end users can kind of update their petitions with it, their ALB petitions with it?
So the use case is when you have the vendor-signed image. Oh, yeah. How do SysX fit into the picture presented here was the question. So SysX are for like when you build, like I said with OBS, if you build it on OBS, then the key, then you have a vendor signed key or vendor provided key. So then you can modify it all locally. So then you're kind of forced to use the extensions because you can sign those locally with your own key, which then has to be enrolled with mock or something like that. And then that's where those things become required. That's for if you want to build your own editions locally. But what's also possible is, of course, is that the distribution itself provides a pre-built set of sysex, which are much more coarse than packages. So there would be a lot more in each sysex. You would have a lot fewer of them. But you could then install, instead of installing a package, you would install a sysex for the specific functionality you need. And that allows you to keep the base image small, because you don't have to put everything in it. But then you can apply a specific sysex to get the functionality that you need as a user. So it's kind of similar, but it would never be as fine-grained as packages. You're never going to have like thousands of sysex. You would have the idea is to have much fewer.
I think that's all the time we have, so let's thank you.